Paul Pasali wants to ask a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Anna. And it is gratifying to listen to your presentation today, Anna, because I've just come back from London and I must admit that the first two newspapers I read was the first one was their water crisis and their drought, and the next one was their health crisis, so don't worry about it. We're way in advance. We've already fixed ours. But I just want to say, from our point of view, with the 1,500 people a week, and we've got a lot of people here from Investor and Delphin and Urban Pacific and the development industry in what's happening in the Western Corridor, and there's a lot of exciting things that I know the City of Ipswich is trying to play its role in that solution. And we've taken our picket fence away, and you might like to comment on the role that communities can make. And we are going down on the 21st of June to John Howard to fix our motorway or else. But it's important that we as a community decide on infrastructure, because if you leave the infrastructure till last, and what you're doing at the Ripley Valley by building the school before the residents come is just tremendous. And I'd just like to hear some comments in regards to that Western Corridor. Mm-hmm. And it's got now the smartest mayor in South East Queensland too. So.
Thank you very much, Paul. Paul's just asking about the development of the Western Corridor and what that might mean in terms of particularly the managing the population growth and the 1,500 people who are coming here. I mean, clearly we've got, you know, you can either do nothing and let it grow higgledy-piggledy all around you, or you can try to be very focused and planned and to be very clear about where we see capacity for developing housing development in the long term, as well as, you know, other sorts of developments and the infrastructure that's then needed to underpin that sort of growth. You'd be aware, Paul, and I hope others are, that we certainly see the Western Corridor as a very important part of the development of South East Queensland. What we don't want is ad hoc development, particularly out on the fringes of our urban centres, where there are no services, no roads, and very little, if any, employment, so that they effectively become dormitory suburbs, everybody trying to get into the city or through the city to get across the city to jobs, and putting more and more burden on the taxpayer when there hasn't been any planning to provide for that infrastructure. So the Western Corridor has been identified as one of the priority areas. We think that area essentially from sort of Forest Lake through Springfield, Ripley Valley, out through to the Ipswich Corridor is a very attractive area for many of the people who will be coming here and many of the developers who are working with your council and with the state government to look at very significant opening up of that area, I think are doing some pretty interesting work. We've made commitments to some big infrastructure that we hope will facilitate that growth, and obviously the rail line is very important in that, as is the new road that will connect that area out of Springfield and Ripley Valley onto the Ipswich Motorway. I could talk for a long time about the Ipswich Motorway if you like. But one of the interesting things that Paul alluded to that we are doing in Ripley Valley, which we haven't really done anywhere else as a state, generally speaking in education, and as you know, I'm a former education minister, once you get to a certain population level and density, that then triggers the normal process for establishing a new school. What we've committed to in Ripley is to actually build a significant new school before that population gets there. Basically a different way of thinking, you know, saying if we build it, they will come. If we can put in place a new school before it might otherwise have been needed, will that draw families to an area that they might not have otherwise contemplated? We don't know the answer to that yet, but we are in the process of implementing it alongside the council. And if it works there, then it's something we will look at in other areas that we've identified as key for development in the southeast corner. Because if we don't do those sorts of things to attract people to areas that they wouldn't have otherwise contemplated, we will see overdevelopment and all of the problems that brings with it in areas that are already, in our view, developed enough and don't have the infrastructure to sustain further growth. Or we'll see the sort of dormitory suburbs isolated with all the problems that brings. So it'll be interesting, and I'm watching it with a great deal of interest, and certainly hope that we're right.
Treasurer, I'm involved with a 80-year-old Queensland manufacturing company. We are increasingly finding ourselves in the situation where we can no longer be an Australian manufacturer. Over 80 years, you have a lot of associations that are not just the owning family, but all the other people involved. We are needing to use export substitution. I see the day when we will have a marketing office in Brisbane and all our manufacturing will be in China and it will be exported straight from China everywhere else. It's an economic reality, but what can we do about the human cost of that?
Mm. Look, thank you, and I wish I had a very easy answer to it. I alluded to it in my my earlier remarks. Well, first of all, I want to say in relation to manufacturing, because I don't think that people appreciate the strength of manufacturing in Queensland, largely because we have been much smaller than some of the southern states. But the growth in manufacturing here has actually certainly equaled surpassed growth in agriculture, and the contribution of manufacturing to the Queensland economy is, I think, just over double the contribution of agriculture, which I don't think fits the stereotype of what people think is the strengths of our economy. So the good news is there is actually very strong growth in the manufacturing sector. Bad news is that some parts of the manufacturing sector are under a lot of pressure from economies like China. And it depends a bit on what you're producing and what you're manufacturing. There are some parts of the sector where I think for a very long time into the future it will be more conducive for them to be producing here. But there are certainly large parts of the manufacturing sector where the economic and commercial reality is we can't make people stay here when the opportunities in parts of Asia are just so, you know, so stark. We are not going to compete with China and India on wages. I don't think that you know, no matter what happens in Australia, no matter who's in power federally or at a state level, and no matter what side of politics, the Australian people are not going to acquiesce to a wage economy like the ones in China and India that we're competing with. Over time, I would think that the stark contrast will start to move a little as China and India start to have different expectations and a rising middle class there starts to give people more opportunities than they've got at the moment. But that's a long way off as well. Probably one of the biggest issues that we've got to face as a state and as a country in the next couple of years is the China Free Trade Agreement. I believe that that will be a much more difficult prospect for Australia to negotiate than the US-Australia Free Trade Agreement. I think there are very significant differences between those two, and I think it's going to be just a very tricky one for all of us, and we'll certainly have a very strong focus on doing what we can to maintain the manufacturing sector that we've got. In the long term, I think we have to focus in Queensland on where are we going to be competitive? And if we're not going to be competitive on wages, then we have to be competitive on the high-end value-adding. And, you know, I'm not familiar enough with what you produce, but there are many companies where parts of what they do is low-skill, low-wage, and whether they will continue to do that onshore for the foreseeable future is, I think, a very big question mark. But similarly, some parts of what they do is very high-end, high-skilled, high-knowledge economy, and it's in their interest to keep that here, if for nothing else, for intellectual property reasons. You know, we are a first-world economy with a very, very strong legal framework around IP. And if your profit margin is about the IP that you bring to the process, then you are much better off being here than in some of the other alternatives. So it's about, you know, some companies, I think, in the long term are going to find it very difficult. How do we manage the human cost of that? Tough. You know, there are, in Queensland at the moment, I have to say, as many people here will attest, if you have, you know, even a relatively low skill level, it's a very strong employment market. So there are plenty of opportunities for people, even with relatively low skills, and the higher skilled you are, you know, there are plenty of other opportunities if a particular company makes a move. But that may not always be the case, and it's certainly something we can't rely on. And, you know, as a government, we put in place various packages to assist people when they find themselves in those sorts of positions. But in the long term, we think the best way to protect our people is to invest heavily in their skills and their education so that they are competitive with their brains rather than low wages. And there will be individuals in that process, you know, who suffer. And we've got to do everything we can to mitigate that in the process. But we've got to be very clear, I think, that the long-term competitive edge that we bring is here.
Treasurer, at the recent CEDA, State of the Nation in Canberra, your federal counterpart, Wayne Swan, was making the point that
our true export performance has been masked by the commodity prices and the favourable prices prevailing worldwide. You had some pretty, on face value, some pretty good statistics for exports for Queensland before. To what extent is that helped by those commodity prices, and what is the true underlying export performance of Queensland?
Look, thank you. I'll be very honest and say, of course, Queensland's export performance at the moment is being helped very substantially by what's happening in our resource sector. But having said that, and I don't have kind of numerical data here, but I could get it for you, that shows that our export performance in our manufacturing sector, in our technology sectors, and in some of the other high-tech areas are stronger than they've ever been, and they are growing. So as a total percentage of exports, they are still modest. I wouldn't say they're small, but they are modest by comparison to this huge boom in resources. But, you know, it is a very strong performance, and it's growing. So if you look at some of the if you look at some of the companies that are associated with mining, for example, and some of the areas that I talked about in my speech, where the technology around mining is an increasing part of what we export. I don't think they're here today, but Mincom's a great example. Mincom is a Brisbane-based company. It is now the largest software company in Australia. I think it's only about 25 years old. It now provides the mining technology software solutions to 8 out of the 10 largest mining companies in the world. So, you know, there are some really extraordinary success stories, and they're growing. In fact, if you talk to organisations like Mincom, their only problem at the moment is keeping up with it, and they are at sort of almost at risk by taking too much on and too many new clients. So there are certainly companies experiencing that are in the very high value-add end. But we've got a long way to go. I'd be very honest and say, you know, this is still early days in the agenda. But we have to recognise it's working, we have to recognise it's paying dividends, and then just be absolutely determined about keeping on track. Sorry, I just should say in relation to resources that, you know, obviously some of the data I've been talking about is the resources that we currently are exploiting. Queensland has about 300 years' supply of coal, but we have considerably unexploited resources in other mining sectors that will continue to see very strong growth in that area. So the Aurukun bauxite lease, largest unexploited bauxite lease in the world, the whole northwest minerals province. You know, if PNG gas becomes a reality and affordable, accessible power into that area becomes a reality, then you'll see, I think, considerable growth in activity in the northwest province in base metals. Similarly, if we can open up the Surat Basin, I mean, we're looking at, as well as the Bowen Basin, looking at both the northern and missing rail links, then again, we will see significant growth. So, while we want to keep diversifying the economy, we certainly see very long-term, sustained, high growth in our resources sector.
And I just want to just add to that one about the manufacturing, because we've been very fortunate to be able to get Capral. They were going to go overseas, and they realised that setting up a business in Queensland was more effective. And we've got Swan Bank Paper and Blackwoods yesterday just returned the sod there. The most important thing is that we're working now with the Beijing government, who wants an industrial land site that's 1 kilometre by 1 kilometre, because they actually want to start bringing 30 new businesses back from China back to Queensland. And we're signing a deal up for $7.6 billion to make that happen, because they now realise that our technology will give them the ability with their technology to be able to export to Europe and America with that Australian-made label. And so the partnership with the Beijing government is going to work very well for Ipswich, and we've now realised that if they want to be competitive in a global market, they've got to be looking at partners outside of China. So what we've got to do, rather than think about everybody going overseas, use our technology and our skills that the government's given us to be able to capitalise on it. And we are, in actual fact, that we've spoken to the Premier and we're getting a little support, and it'll just be good to bring some of these big national companies back to Australia.
Absolutely.